Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I mean, Malcolm, I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable position here, and I don't want you to have to say anything.
I'm about to put him in an uncomfortable position.
Okay, let me do it first.
Hey, everybody, it's Tim Miller from The Bulwark.
I'm Cam Caskey, and this is FY Pod, where we talk about young people stuff and cool stuff, and we have a great time. I'm so excited about today. We are joined by state representative from Pennsylvania, DNC vice chair, and one of the youngest people in the entire government, Mr. Malcolm Kenyatta. How you doing, man?
I am. Listen, my legs hate me, but other than that, I'm doing fantastic.
DNC vice chair, that's a controversial position. There's a lot of drama, a lot of Sturm und Drang around that position. You know, you never know what's going to happen to DNC vice chair. You know, people just start.
I think I'm the only person in history to win twice, so I'll take it.
We're happy for you.
That's pretty cool. Well, I want to talk about that because chair is something that you sit down in, and you just walked 108 miles like the fucking Proclaimers song. I'm going to be parentheses 500 miles. Everybody give it a listen. Good Scottish history. But before we talk about
Scottish, I thought they were Aussie.
No, they are Scottish. Are you kidding me?
Tim, they are clearly Scottish.
How the fuck? I don't know the difference between all the limey nonsense. You know, it's all the same.
First of all, I agree. I like to bunch all of the UK adjacent people together. I think that it streamlines things.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about Pennsylvania transit policy, because Malcolm, what you did to stand up for what's going on with that was so effective, because I did not know it was a thing at all, and now I do. But before we get into that, I just kind of want your background, origin story, first date conversation, because you're 35 and the Democrats have now twice trusted you to take a leadership position, which is kind of nuts. So like, how did you get here?
You know, so I always say, like, my entry into politics is the most uncomplicated part of my life. I grew up working poor. I was pissed off about it. And I wanted to know who the hell was the manager, who was in charge, who I could complain to. And then I recognized that we are all kind of the manager. My dad was a social worker. My mom was a home health aide. And one day at Temple University, my dad was lucky. This cute little thing named Kelly strolled on in. 9 months later, here I go. My parents were freaking fantastic people, both of whom I lost by the time I was 27. But they did not see in each other the beauty that I saw in them. My parents freaking hated each other. And so they divorced when I was pretty young. I got my first job at 12 years old, washing dishes. Like, and believe me, if they had hung on this business called Patterson's Palace, it was a vegan soul food restaurant. Like, this would be their moment, like 2025. Yeah. But
that would absolutely obliterate in Brooklyn right now.
It would do so well. But in 2002, it was not doing, you know, as well. But incredible folks. And they gave me a great little gig, just washing dishes. And that gave my mom just a little bit of wiggle room. But I got involved in politics. I was 12 years old. I came home. We were living at like the third or fourth place we lived by the time I graduated high school. And I was just pissed. Okay. 12, full of every hormone possible, just raging. And my mom had lit a Newport cigarette on the stove, and she's listening to me complain about everything going on in the world. And she said, you know what? If you care so fucking much, why don't you go do something about it? And I was like, oh, like, okay. I thought you were gonna give me a hug, but she gave me that's not what I got. And she was like, go talk to the lady down the street. She's the black captain. And lady down the street was like, you know what? Believe it or not, they just started this thing for junior black captains. And I ran, knocked on the doors, all my neighbors, just like I do now, state rep, to become a junior black captain. It was the first thing I ever did civically. And it blew my mind, right? This idea that like I could go do something.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with the junior black captain. What is that program?
Oh, so Philadelphia has this program.
Block captain.
Block captain.
I thought you said black captain. And I was like, oh, like a young.
Well, I was black leadership. While I was doing it.
He thought it's like an NAACP program. All right.
I was a young black block captain on this incredible block, which used to be in my legislative district, by the way. But Philadelphia has this program called Philadelphia Be More Beautiful. And basically what they do are try to get people engaged on their block. And former mayor John Street was like so invested in this program. He actually had a essay competition that the junior block captains could write about, talking about their journeys. And believe it or not, I won that competition my year as junior block captain. I just want to say,
what was the essay about? Do you have it right there? Do you have it handy? Could you read it to us?
I have it upstairs. It exists. It's framed. Okay. I put all my college degrees there on the ground. All right. That's up framed because that's what matters.
My college degree is underground. I would say 6 feet underground because I killed it after one semester. But okay. So
I got another question for you before we get into business. Which is, we can do a little life advice around here for people. All right. Before we get into politics, I don't know. I'm just in a mood today. All right. And I just want to talk about some, I just want to vibe out for a second.
Yeah. Let's do it.
You've had a glow up. Okay. This is true, right? So
that
this is
accurate.
This is my perception of your glow up. You know, I follow you on social media. I don't know, maybe Instagram or one of them. And going back, you know, a while back, because you're a rising star. In the party, and I like to keep my eye, I like to monitor the rising stars, you know, see what they're doing on social media. And one day, about a year or two ago, I guess it probably was, I was scrolling through and I was like, you know, going, you know, doing the scroll through the stories, you know, not really thinking about things, kind of spacing out, you know, touching the button like you do. And I get to it and I was like, who's that man? And then I scrolled back to it and then clicked on it. And I was like, oh man, what is going on with Malcolm? So can you explain what happened?
Yeah, so some folks might remember, some folks maybe have forgotten, but I ran for U.S. Senate against John Fetterman. And after that primary, as you might imagine, I was, you know, pretty beat up and tired and sad. And, you know, I wish I had that thing where I was sad I couldn't eat. Like, I have the opposite. When I'm sad, I'm like, anything in sight going in this mouth here. And so I was eating, and one day I was just like feeling like crap. And I said, you know, I really need to go to the doctor. Like, I'm just feeling awful. And the doctor came in. The doctor was like, your blood sugar is like 325 something. Like, it was awful. Like, literally, she gave me some insulin. She was like, I can't let you leave at this rate. Like, you could have a stroke or, you know, or a heart attack, just like the way you are living. And she's no longer my doctor now, but she's this incredible Nigerian doctor. And she's like, listen, I'm going to either put you on a bunch of medicine, or you like be better. She's like, whatever you want, I'll write the script, or you can just be better. And so over the last 3 years, I've lost about 100 pounds. Yeah.
What's your secret for anybody out there who's trying to be better?
There is no secret. And I've had folks say, well, you know, Malcolm has taken, you know, Ozempic or whatever. That's not what I did. And I totally would. And if, you know, Serena wants to share part of that deal that she got, listen, sign me up. I would be the poster boy for it if I could. No, it turns out all the things that they tell you to do, like listen to your doctor, take their advice about your personal circumstances. And then, like, you have to do this thing where you go to the gym all the time. And then you have to eat the stuff that's healthy. It's all that boring stuff.
That's so much more boring than Maha. You know, it'd be much better if you could just be like, man, all you do, it's just you do the beef tallow, okay?
A little ivermectin. Yeah.
What's the milk that they do? The, like, unpasteurized milk or something?
Unpasteurized milk. Yeah. I will tell you, as I did this walk, I walked through a lot of, you know, cows that could have given me some unpasteurized milk right from the tap. I did not take them up on it. But yeah, it was the you know, it's the best thing I've ever done. And I'll say before we get into the business, I had some woman who came to my office to like lobby for, you know, for like kids or something, after school programs. And as she's leaving, she says, I hope this is like not rude to say, but like, I think, you know, I like, you've lost like a lot of weight. And I said, first of all, it's not rude to say, that's why I fucking did it. Go tell everybody. Like, please, go tell everybody. Yeah.
Spread the word. If you think I look hot, please tell me. Okay. Like,
there's nothing wrong with that. That's why I did it. To stay alive and then in appropriate circumstances, you know, to be able to take my shirt off and feel good. So there you go.
We noticed on Instagram, it caused the back button to be pressed by me.
That's why I'm in this business. Congrats. I want the back button pressed on my stories. That's it.
All right. So you walked. Why did you walk? I've been getting this story kind of out of like my peripheral. It's like the SEPTA is broken, so people can't go to the Eagles games anymore unless they have tickets. And then it's like the FanDuel had to come in and fix it and fund it. Like the funding is so low for public trans that's like a crisis. And
wait, FanDuel.
Yeah, the gambling site is paying. They did. Is throwing money in so that people can go tailgate at the Eagles games via. This is true, right, Malcolm?
This is true. We're having private businesses.
Explain what the crisis is, and then talk about your wall.
I truly don't understand it at all. So if you could just start, like you're talking to a 5-year-old.
Yep. So it's the most uncomplicated and sad story in the world, in one of the largest metro areas in the entire country. Republicans are actively and willfully dismantling public transit. You know, I was just in Texas yesterday because I'm a maniac. After walking 105 miles, next morning I got on a plane to go headline a fundraiser in Texas, and then I got back on a plane to come home to do some fun stuff that we're going to do outside the game. We have some great signs that folks are going to be holding, reminding people who defunded SEPTA and what's going on in this moment. But long story short, I mentioned Texas because you remember the Texas Democrats who fled their state to try to do what they could to draw attention to and push back against the gerrymandering happening in their state. We sort of have the reverse thing, where Republican senators in my state fled our state capitol, refusing to do their job because they did not want to fund mass transit, not just in Philadelphia, but across Pennsylvania. Philadelphia is obviously the focus of this, and SEPTA stands for Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Agency. So it's the focus of it because they are in a deep financial hole and had made clear to the legislature over a number of years that if we do not increase funding, if we do not change the way we're funding mass transit, that they were going to have to make dramatic cuts, that they were going to end up cutting service by about 45%, that they were going to raise fares by 20%. And I say to folks who don't pay attention to SEPTA. SEPTA actually doesn't just serve Pennsylvania. SEPTA actually serves tens of thousands of riders from New Jersey every single day. Tens of thousands of riders from Delaware. So if you're in Delaware and you need to get to Philadelphia Airport, you're taking SEPTA.
Well, let's just make 85- them pay. Let's just jack up the prices on them. Can't we make Delaware cover the bill for this?
Listen, we want everybody to have some skin in the game. But unfortunately, what ended up happening is Republicans basically just left. They've only been in session 27 days since today. House Democrats have passed 5 bipartisan bills. The House is the only chamber we control for the first time in like 32 years. And since we've been in control, like 93% of the bills we've passed have been bipartisan. And I say to people, it's not because Democrats are walking away from our values, because we're not putting bills on the floor that are about raising minimum wage or paid family leave or funding mass transit or trying to legalize cannabis. It's just that there's been a game in Harrisburg and a game played in Washington where if you don't want to vote on something, if you're in control, you just get to not put it on the floor. So nobody has to be on the record on where they stand. House Democrats have put good bills on the floor. And we've had a number of Republicans, particularly in the suburban areas, who have voted for this legislation. And they voted with us multiple times. Those bills have then gone on to the Senate, where the Senate does not even take up the bills. And on the day that SEPTA began cutting service, which so happened to be the day that school started, the leader of the Republican Senate was out shooting clay targets with the wealthiest people in Pennsylvania. One of the biggest donors for Republicans in Pennsylvania is also Donald Trump's biggest donor, Jeffrey Yass. You may know him. He's a big owner of TikTok.
He's a TikTok guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's Pennsylvania's wealthiest guy. He funds this organization called the Commonwealth Foundation. Republicans in Pennsylvania, you don't have to raise money at all because we have no campaign finance limits. I've been trying to change that for a while. So these folks are doing this thing where they're running ads for the Republicans in the suburbs where this is a major issue, saying they funded SEPTA. And then they're running ads in other areas for the folks who don't want to fund SEPTA, saying they stood up to Philadelphia and they're not funding SEPTA. And so right now we have no budget, a huge budget impasse. We have no funding for mass transit. And right now, I guess we're, you know, like Tiny Tim with a little bag, hoping that, you know, some nice casino magnet will fund our transit for a couple of hours. That's where we are in Pennsylvania.
Is there anything Shapiro can do about this, or are his hands tied?
So there's nothing he can do, you know, unilaterally. He was able to last year, because of the Biden administration sign off, to flex some dollars that were going to be used for highway projects to stave off what happened this year in terms of SEPTA cutting services. You might imagine that the Trump administration does not want to sign off on him doing that. Sean Duffy, I don't think, has a lot of interest in helping us to do that. And so instead, we're seeing the dismantling of our public services.
I saw some news today. Sean Duffy has two mortgages, just like Lisa Cook. You know how they're trying to get rid of Lisa Cook from the Fed board because she has two prime mortgages? Sean Duffy also has that.
I wonder if he'll be fired.
I wonder if he'll be fired. We might get a new transportation secretary. So you never know. Hope springs eternal. Anyway, sorry.
Was he on Real World or Road Rules?
He was on Real World. I think both.
He was on both. Okay, I was like, maybe we can get one from the other show. Yeah. But that's where we are right now. And this is a prime example of Republicans dismantling not only the social safety net, but dismantling, you know, government. And because of the big, you know, awful bill, so much of it is hypothetical, right? Because they've pushed the cuts to 2026, 2027. Yeah. I've been saying, if the country wants to understand what Republicans mean about cutting government, Pennsylvania is the place you want to look, because they're doing it right now.
Cameron, close your ears for 1 second. Close your ears. Okay. Malcolm, so he asked you about Shapiro and what he could do. What do you think about Shapiro? How's he doing? Do you like him?
I like Josh. I've known Josh for a long time. And, you know, Josh put forward over 200 days ago a budget that would have funded mass transit. Yeah. He came out in support of legalizing cannabis, which is one of the revenue streams that House Democrats have said could help to fund mass transit in a recurring way. They have just said no across the board. And it's so frustrating, because we have worked, as I've said, very hard in the House. We only have the majority by one vote, okay? We call it all the time, a humble majority. We all the time get Republicans to vote for our stuff. I mean, you know, believe it or not, I mean, as a progressive Democrat, I get
some
Republicans
of the,
to vote
some
for my
votes. We don't name who they are, but like, there's some lefties out there who, like, think he's kind of a dweeb and don't really like him. They give him some shit. Like, what do you say to that?
Listen, the only way to avoid criticism is to do nothing and be nothing. So, you know, a lot of people think I'm a fucking dweeb. I don't know. I think about it like not at all. And I go and I kiss my husband and we watch Netflix and don't think about these people. I'm sure Josh does the same thing.
Well, no husband, wife, but.
That's right. That's right. Lori, she's great.
So, hey, Cameron, welcome back.
There's something I need to understand a little better here, because I'm just so new to this issue. What is FanDuel doing? Because I fucking hate FanDuel. I have the MLB Pass subscription where I pay fucking $30 a month to watch my baseball games.
To FanDuel? They own it?
No. Oh, it's okay. MLB. But there are games at least once a week, at least for my team, where you can't watch it on MLB. You have to watch it on FanDuel. So
are you fucking kidding me? Really?
It's absolutely maddening, because if I'm paying $30 to MLB, I should be able to watch MLB. But FanDuel, who seems to operate in the evil monopolistic way that something like ESPN does, is getting in my way. And as a FanDuel hater who wants to watch my fucking Milwaukee Brewers, who are, by the way, going up against your Philadelphia Phillies tonight, actually right now the game started at 4:10 Eastern time. As someone who wants to watch these games, I want more reasons to hate FanDuel, because I'm a hater. So what is their involvement in getting in the way of SEPTA?
So SEPTA does these trains, you know, part of the reason Philadelphia is like so attractive, part of the reason we had the convention, you know, here in 2016, or we're going to have the World Cup and all these big events, is because if we make the investments we need to make, Philadelphia is one of the, it's the most walkable city in America, based on the people who study this, and where our stadium and our entertainment venues are, they are kind of in this one area, like at the sports complex in South Philly. They're all in this one area. And it's easy transit right there. And those special trains for special events, they basically run trains until everybody gets home, and they do it very quickly. One of the cuts that they made is they were cutting all special services. And so they said, we're not going to run the special trains that we run to get everybody home. The trains are going to stop at the new curfew of 9 p.m. and you have to take Uber, walk, do whatever the hell you're going to do. And so on occasion, you have folks who are doing big events at the sports arena who want to brand the trains, who want to do other things. They say, so we'll cover people's rides. So nobody has to pay to get there. We want to cover it. And then they get to market. So I don't love it for the same reason, you know, that you don't like it, is we have a bunch of folks who are going to be cheering on the best team in the NFL. That's good. But the bad thing is you're going to have a bunch of folks who are drunk, who are going to, you know, possibly want to gamble. That's okay in moderation, obviously. But they're going to be a captive audience to get, you know, pushed, whatever FanDuel wants to push to folks.
I mean,
and
Malcolm,
that's not great.
I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable position here. And I don't want you to have to say anything.
I'm about to put him in an uncomfortable position.
Okay, let me do it first. Philly sports fans, man, it's tough. You guys got some issues over there.
People are mean. People are kind of mean and nasty and not very nice.
Listen. My husband says it this way. People in Philly are kind, but not necessarily always nice. But they are kind.
Okay. Like the one thing you can get Red Sox fans and Yankees fans, mortal enemies, to agree on is that Philly sports fans are another level. It's another level. Like Miami Dolphins fans. I grew up a Dolphins fan. We never felt greatness, and therefore none of us were ever truly invested in our team. So when the Patriots came to town and ripped us to shit, we just walked out and we were like, yeah, fuck Tom Brady, whatever. But Philly, like, it would be war. Like,
it would be. And I actually had on before I got on, I had on an Eagles shirt and an Eagles hat. And I said, I'm not going to be obnoxious for the pod. So I took it off. I am an obnoxious Philly sports fan. I make no bones about it. You know, when it starts, I'm an asshole. My shirt is right
here. Saquon.
I'm all about it.
Listen, you won Super Bowl here in New Orleans. I didn't buy tickets because I was like, I don't want to see Philly fans happy. I was like, it's too much money for me to buy to go in there and watch Philly fans be happy. So I watched the game from my couch. I want to get into. Oh wait, actually, before we get to DNC business, this walk. So why were you walking across everywhere? Did you learn anything about yourself or others?
I did, and it was one of the hardest things I've done. It was one of the best things I've done. This impasse has been going on, and at this point, the only thing that's going to break the impasse are people getting involved. Literally, I said this throughout the walk. We did so many Instagram lives. We talked to people across the Commonwealth who were worried about transit. You know, I was delirious and had a bunch of sort of stream of consciousness conversations with folks who were indulging me. But a part of what I said a lot was the people, all of us, are more powerful than the people in power. I'm using air quotes for people who won't watch this video. And what I was so excited about is throughout this walk, you had people reaching out to me saying, Malcolm, I'm calling my elected officials for the first time in my life. The easiest, the oldest, and one of the most effective tricks in politics is to just get us to all fucking hate each other. Folks are just so good at it. That has been the argument of Senate Republicans, that folks in rural Pennsylvania don't want to subsidize or fund folks in Philadelphia. And so we're holding our ground in defense of rural Pennsylvania. I walk through rural Pennsylvania, places where people are on my live saying, Malcolm, are you sure you're going to be there by yourself, black guy with locks in this area? And I'm like, hell yeah, because the Commonwealth has to work for the common good. And a part of the challenge we have is that folks don't talk to each other. You know, when I was the Democratic nominee for Auditor General statewide, we only have four statewide positions. I was the Democratic nominee for Auditor General. Don't bring it up because I did get the most votes of any Democrat to ever run for Auditor General ever. And still was not successful because Donald Trump went and got the most votes of any person to run statewide in Pennsylvania. So I got kind of screwed.
Some blue and on people listening will say that was cheating. What do you you think about that?
You know, I've been saying that to my colleagues because I sit on the committee that oversees the elections. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, I've listened to you guys for years talk about how the election is rigged. This would be like perfect time for me to say the election was rigged. But, you know, it wasn't rigged. And what I did was go around, talk to Pennsylvanians. We walked through cornfields. We walked through suburban areas. We walked down trails. And along the way, people on the side of the road, you know, flagging me down to say, hey, I've been seeing your walk on your Instagram live, or I've been seeing it, you know, on TV. Do you want water? Are you good? You know, we're pulling for you in places where we project on to people that, and we certainly project this view that racism is somehow a disease of rural communities. That's not true. That's not true. There's certainly racism, discrimination everywhere. But Pennsylvanians are good fucking people. They are good people who actually want government to work. And what I found more than anything, Tim, is so many people who have given up on the system completely, who, you know, were like, hey, I wasn't even paying attention to this debate because I had already factored in that government wasn't going to work because you guys don't do shit. Of course it doesn't work because nobody in government works. And so many people were like, you know what? I'm so happy to see somebody out here actually doing something, putting their, you know, body on the line. But, you know, it wasn't just me. So many of my colleagues joined me. So many people joined me. Every day I had a couple of people be like, hey, can I walk with you for a mile or two? And folks joined me. And it was very, very special. Supposed to take me 5 days, got there in 3.5 days.
Well, I mean, the you from right after the Senate race probably would have gotten there in like 100 days.
But I would have never tried. I would have never tried. I was just walking to get something else to eat, man. I would have never tried.
That's an uplifting kumbaya movement. I have a couple of other ones we've got to get to.
Do I pick
your poison or do we decide ourselves?
This is you tell me.
It's our show. We'll decide ourselves. Well, why don't we do kumbaya? We do happy talk.
Yep.
There's a DNC meeting recently. You're the vice chair. And there was a few moments that were just a little, you know, I used to be a Republican back when you were fat, you know,
not too long ago.
All right. So we've all had some transformations and sometimes the transformation is tough for me. Okay. Sometimes it's tough. Yeah. And one of those is like when I'm watching a DNC meeting and we're doing land acknowledgments. We got a fight song. We have a fight song. Yay, DNC. Yay, DNC. Did you see the fight song? Were you there?
I don't know about the fight song.
What's that?
What fight song, Tim?
There was a fight song. It was good. That was passed out with some lyrics.
No, I don't remember this.
Meeting. Do you mean fight song as in fight song by Rachel Platten? Not fight song by Rachel Platten.
That's already triggering enough. I don't know anything about that. Okay. The third way... Yeah. We've got our issues with, put out a memo about all the words they don't like, you know, people shouldn't use, like, you know, holding space. Cameron likes to hold space for people.
Birthing person was one of them. BIPOC and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. What do you think about this? Like, does this stuff matter? Do you worry about it when you're at the meetings? You're like, guys, can we chill with the land acknowledgements? Like, do we have to talk so weird? Like, do you think that's a problem or do you think that people overstate it?
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
So there was a lot in there, and let me just try to take it one at a time. On the land acknowledgement piece, I think there are a lot of people who are making a big hoopla out of something that I think serves an important purpose. I don't believe in this politics of division. You've heard me talk about it. And for me, it's not, you know, kumbaya. It's about how we get power and how we utilize it to do what I think our ultimate mission is. And I've been saying this so much that I went on Fox and the host said to me, we've heard you say this, move on. But I'm going to keep saying because it's important. I think the Democratic Party's mission and ultimately our message is three words: make life better. That is our job, to make life better for folks. And I think in doing that, we don't have to leave anybody behind. We don't have to leave our indigenous folks behind. We don't have to leave any region behind. We don't have to leave any group of people behind. And in fact, that dilutes the power that we need to build when we're kicking people out. I think as a party, we do have to keep what the Super Bowl award-winning coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, Nick Sirianni, said to the team when we won last year. You keep the main thing the main thing. And for me, the main thing is very simple. A lot of working class folks who come from communities like mine are getting the shit kicked out of them every single day by a bunch of billionaires that have been able to buy politicians like they're buying NASCAR vehicles and who have spent their time and have utilized their power, not only to not make our lives better, but to make our lives fucking miserable. Our job is to make life better for folks and to talk about it. And I have. And unfortunately, the news media, which sort of aggregates what happens, does not pick up on the things that I've been saying all across this country. And even when I travel abroad to visit our Dems abroad, that our job is simple. To make sure that everybody has one family sustaining job, ideally backed up by a union, that job affords you the ability to buy or rent a home in a neighborhood that you can afford, that is safe, that if you decide to have a family or expand it, that your kids can walk out that front door and go to a fully funded public school where they get a quality education that puts them on a path to either go to a trade school or to a community college or a four-year degree. And then you get to watch them live their lives and retire with a level of dignity and decency, hopefully in the same damn house where you raised them. That is everything. Everything else is noise and nonsense. That's the only reason I'm in public life. It's the only reason I got involved in government, is to make that a reality. And I think we can make that a reality. Obviously, to get there, we have to get on the other side of a bunch of assholes who see the job of government as filling their pockets and at dividing us up on the silliest of topics that if we didn't sort of inject into the bloodstream of the American populace, we would not be talking about. We were doing land acknowledgments for a long time. Nobody talked about it until folks started talking about woke this, woke that, woke whatever. All of that is bullshit. What we spent time doing at that meeting, in my view, was engaging with a bunch of new members who just joined the DNC for the first time, helping them get acclimated to what they signed up for, and learning from each other through our caucuses and through our conversations about what we need to do exactly what I say. I didn't run to be vice chair of this party because I thought everything was going swimmingly. I ran because I thought we had some really important things to fix. And that's what I have to be focused on, you know, every single day, in my view.
I've got one follow-up, then I'll let Cameron go. I hear you, man. I agree with everything you said. I guess my question is, doesn't sometimes the focus on some of this other stuff, like you guys are doing, own goal a little bit by like having all of these conversations that you know that might unnecessarily divide people? I mean, I was listening to this guy, Richard Reeves, recently, who's who's worried about young men and the problem with young men. And he like brought up a DNC website, and it was essentially like our affinity groups, I think it was called. It's like Pacific Islanders and Asian Americans and the elderly and BIPOCs and indigenous. And like you go through all the lists, and he's like, it's literally you list everybody in the country except white dudes. It's like, what is the point of this? Like, why are you dividing every, like by having all, like we need to have, you know, meetings, you know, where we ensure that we have a person from this community and that community there. Like by doing, I'm for diversity. Like I want like you guys to have good people at the DNC, but like sometimes is the emphasis so focused on that stuff that you lose focus on the shit you were just talking about. You know what I mean?
So let me say it this way. You know, I used to work at the Greater Philly Chamber of Commerce, leading efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And a number of years ago, my husband, who's incredibly smart, said something to me that completely like blew my mind open. And so I stopped talking about diversity a long time ago, and I use a different word in its place, distinctions. Our distinctions matter. Me growing up in a working poor family in North Philly certainly shapes my view of the world. And I think has ingrained in me a sense of empathy that we need in more of our elected officials. When you know what it's like to get the crap kicked out of you just because of the lottery of birth, or to have people treat you differently because I decided to marry my husband and to not have my family look the way somebody else says my family should look, those distinctions matter. I think the idea of, you know, diversity and why that language can sometimes be a trap is diverse from what? And I think also we are erasing the distinctions that a lot of white guys carry. White guys are distinct. You know, you are Irish or you are Italian or you are Polish or you are from a rural community or you are from an urban community or you are from a suburb. And all of those things are important. And we don't need to push them, you know, away to be a strong, thriving party that focuses on economics. In fact, what politics requires more than anything else is courage. And we need some more people in this moment who have the courage to say, in our pursuit to make life better for working people and working families, we are not going to race to the bottom and leave anybody behind. I refuse to do it. We don't have to do it. And I don't think it's a distraction. We can say, hey, don't treat anybody like shit. Okay, full stop. And also make sure people have the economic stability they need to thrive in this country that, in my view, is the greatest country to ever exist. And I know what it means to live in a country where it has not always felt like it's loved me back. But I know that this is our inheritance. And our job is to wake up every single day and to make it work. I've said this, and I said it a lot during the walk. You know, democracy in America sometimes is like the group project from hell. And the easiest thing to do is to walk away and say, either we'll fail the assignment, I don't care because I'm so frustrated, or we'll let these other people do it and we hope the smart people in the group will carry us. Everybody has something to offer in this moment. And I think we make ourselves a weaker place when folks are too fragile to hear that somebody is from somewhere else. We talk about fragility. I think the fragility is people being afraid of hearing about somebody's story that is different than theirs. But I agree with you on one point, and I've said this as DNC vice chair, we certainly should have an agenda that touches everybody, that leaves nobody behind. And I think the tip of that spear has to be about how we make people's lives better around the economy and how we put everybody in a position where they have a level of economic stability. When the economy is the way that it is, so top heavy, the folks at the top don't want us talking about that structural imbalance. And so instead, we're talking about a whole bunch of other nonsense that they know is not important, but they do that because they don't want to solve our problems. When politicians don't want to solve your problems, then they have to get you focused on bullshit. I want to solve people's problems, and I am willing to work with anybody to do it. And even as like an unabashed, you know, progressive Democrat, people look at my voting record and see I get Republicans to vote with me on certain stuff. I vote with Republicans on certain stuff because I fundamentally agree and believe, excuse me, in this group project, sometimes group project from hell. We have to fight just as hard on the stuff we agree on as we do on the stuff we disagree on. And I think right now, as Americans, we have to get those small wins under our belt. We have to believe that our neighbor is not our enemy. And in this moment, we have to look to each other, not turn on each other. First and foremost, we have to do that as a Democratic Party. And then we have to do that for the country, because the Democratic Party cannot confidently go into America and say, we're going to bring this country together if we can't bring ourselves together first.
Yeah. My thing with the woke speak stuff is just, I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like when I see that there's a land acknowledgement, I'm like, all right, they're doing a land acknowledgement. For me, it's not what Democrats are saying. It's what they're not saying.
Yeah.
Like everybody's pissing their pants about saying birthing person, which I get characterized as this woke lib. I'm not going to say birthing person. It sounds goofy as fuck. But there is language I use where it sounds very woke because that's just how I was programmed. But I don't fucking care. I don't care how Democrats say stuff. I care what they're talking about. And it's like the entire party has forgotten that we have an administration right now that's run by 8 crypto billionaires who are having Donald Trump actually do a crypto scam while he's in office. I don't know the last time I heard anyone talking about the literal crypto scam that Trump did in office.
Yeah, $5.8 billion or whatever he's raised, you know,
something fucking insane like that. I don't hear a lot of Democrats talking about things like techno-feudalism and the idea that Peter Thiel and the Project 2025 guys are not only trying to dismantle democracy, they are just outright saying it. And I think that some Democrats will get caught up in this virtue signaling identity politics so they can sound like they are in line with the party's interests. But right now it's like, no, democracy is on the line, which is something that's so tired to say at this point that it's almost cringe. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. like there's like 12 billionaires right now who are trying to make it so the job market disappears. The proletariat is not educated. They want the education system to fall apart so everybody's job is Uber Eats. And it's like,
well, not Uber Eats anymore, man. That'll be Melania was talking today about the first generation humanoids that are going to be doing the Uber Eats. So it'll got to be something else.
I've not heard from Melania in forever. So thank you.
It's like the White House is being run by somebody who works completely at the behest of people who want every single job to be done by robots that suck up fresh water from Black communities and poison them. And I'm like, so you can say woke words all you want, but like there is a straight up evil organization of Republican puppet masters and tech billionaires and people like Zuckerberg and Peter Thiel, who's injecting himself with Twinkie blood. No. And like,
Cam, you were spot on. And I think it's, you know, such bullshit. Everybody has an identity. It's just often seems that when we talk about, you know, certain identities, those are the problem. But the solution for all of us is to recognize that people's main identity is being a member of their family. That's folks' main identity, being a brother, a sister, a parent, a spouse. And, you know, when government is not corrupted beyond recognition, when government actually works, when it really fucking works for working people and working family, do you know what you get to do? Do you know what you get to do? To not think about this shit and to live your life, to be with the people that you love. That's the point I keep making about transit, right? We've had this argument as Democrats, and it is an appropriate argument, that like shutting down transit, we'll just stick with this example. It keeps people from getting to school and getting to work. And there's been great research that's come out, great reporting on this, that it has kept people from getting to school and getting to work. That's important. But more importantly, Republicans and transigents on this issue right now is keeping people from enjoying the parts of life that make life worth living. When you are stuck in traffic because there's 275,000 more cars on the road, it means you're late to making dinner for that kid that you love more than anything else in the world. Tim's a parent and you know it. Coming home and looking in their face, nothing else matters in that moment.
After this, baby, we're doing fish tacos tonight.
See, that's what you're doing. And like, who the fuck wants to be in the car like beeping at some other person instead of making fish tacos with their kids? That's what folks want to do. And as a Democrat, what I want to do is to make you think about politics as little as possible because it is operating and functioning at a high level. But the only way we're going to get to that is that more people get involved in this group project. You know, you cannot leave politicians alone. Politicians need to be fucking supervised, and they can only be supervised by the people paying attention, listening to your podcast. I'm getting educated about what's going on. And I have to say, Noah Goschel, who works for me on my staff, he listens to this every single day. And he said, if I say his name on this podcast, he'll freak out. So Noah, there you go. Freak out.
All right, Noah.
There you go. And so, you know, I think that that's what we have to do. And that's how I try to think about politics and talk about it. It really is about getting to a place where you can spend more of your life with the people you love and less time watching people on TV fucking yell at each other.
Is Noah bisexual? Cameron's drawing a big audience of bisexuality. We don't have to out him on the show.
Noah has an incredible girlfriend who will punch him in the head.
What up, Noah's girlfriend? Anyway, I'm just saying we're drawing a lot. Okay. Noah might get mad at me though.
Somebody came up to me today, by the way, speaking of bisexual fans, somebody came up to me, seems like they were a bisexual, and said they were a fan of the show. And it was while I was on a phone call. It was right next to the subway, so I was being really loud. And my friend was telling me that she finally hooked up with another woman, which is something she had been really interested in for a while.
Hell yeah.
And I said something that Tim said at a Bulwark live show in June. And I said it loud because I wanted to be heard with the train nearby. I was like, so did you guys do scissoring? And then somebody comes up to me, which Tim said, by the way, at the Free Andre fundraiser. And
was this when Tim was on Dan Savage? Tim, I saw you on Dan Savage's podcast.
I was. Yeah, I like talking about scissoring. I went to a lesbian brunch the other day. I brought up scissoring. It's interesting. It's an interesting thing. It's just so foreign to me.
See, when I talk about it, I talk about cutting turf. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I don't know. You mean I don't want to know. Cameron, what are you saying?
No, I was just going to say, like, at first I was like, oh, it must be so disappointing to this fan that they hear me talking about scissoring. And I was like, no, this must actually be them being like, oh, no, okay, so they're actually like that.
They're actually
and that's
like
what would happen if somebody read Tim and my private text with each other, they'd be like, okay, yeah, they are what they tell us they are. But anyway,
and just in our private text, we're doing a hard turn from inappropriate sex talk to making fun of politicians we don't like. And this one might be awkward for you, Malcolm, because you ran against him and it's in your state. And he's in your party still. You're the vice chair. What's going on with John Fetterman? I'm not sure that he's really 100% with us, I guess, is a concern I have. I just think it's important as a senator that we know that somebody's like really got all their faculties. And we've had a couple of those lately with other, Dianne Feinstein was in there a little bit past when she had all her faculties. I'm concerned for his health. I don't want to, but he's got a job to do and I'm a little worried about it. What do you think's going on with that guy?
Listen, I'll say this, and it's not a dodge, right? John and his family and his doctors know more about his health than I do, and I can't even, hazard to guess. But in terms of, John's votes and other things like that, obviously, I ran against them because we would have voted differently on a variety of different issues. But in this moment, we need as many people as possible who are willing to be a check on this administration, which, Cam, you said it, and, kind of are at a point where people gloss over, but piece by piece, they are dismantling everything the American project is about. And I've said this because Donald Trump loves to talk about how much he loves America. Donald Trump does not like America that much. He does not like what makes America, America. I think I would say that Donald Trump actually does not love America. He hates the rule of law. He hates our Constitution. He hates that there are multiple branches of government. He hates that the voters get to choose and decide. He hates that we have independent agencies where they're supposed to be experts executing, whether it's our fiscal policy and the Fed or whether it's our health policy at the CDC. He hates what actually makes America great, but he was so effective at engaging in what you've heard me say, the most effective tool, and there's a reason people go back to it. If you can get people to just fucking hate each other, then none of us are focusing on the fact that across this country, many of us will never hit that $1 billion jackpot. We'll never be a part of the group of the 17 billionaires that you talked about, Cam. And all of us are going to be figuring it out every single day. How do we pay our rent? How do we pay our mortgage? How do we figure it out? And we need to do what I often make this joke. So my husband likes sci-fi. I'm not a big sci-fi person, but if I want to live and sit in my fucking living room, I have to listen to his shows. So he was watching a show called Silo that some people listening will know.
I do like Silo.
You like Silo?
Okay. Kind of barely like sci-fi.
Well, I'm like, I don't like Silo, but I'm listening to Silo, and one of the main characters says something that I love. And I said, babe, thanks for having this on, because I'm going to put it in every speech that I give. She said, we have to figure out how to be angry with each other and not at each other. And the anti-oligarchic, fascist, pro-American movement in this country, who has a bunch of different ideas on domestic policy, has to figure out how to be angry with each other and not at each other, or there will not be a country that we will salvage. I think right now everything's about stopping Donald Trump.
You're telling us we need to hug John Fetterman right now. We need to be angry with John. We got to hug him. You're right.
Those are not my words. I was talking about something different.
Can we give him a group hug, Cam? What do you think? Should we be welcoming John?
I'm not known, John, to be a huggy person.
Don't yell at teachers. Like the report that came out where his staffers basically were like, yeah, he got really, really mad meeting with teachers and lost his temper at them and started screaming. And that there are meetings he's in where he's screaming like, why does everybody hate me? Why is everybody so mad? I'm like, dude, you got to keep your shit together. Like, I'm bipolar.
So you don't want to hug him then? You're not a big toucher, though. Maybe me and Malcolm can hug him.
It's not even the hug thing.
I think John's a big hugger. I think ultimately, it's what I said before, that all politicians, I don't care what party, folks got to be supervised. And the way we supervise them is by the people staying engaged, paying attention to what the hell is going on. I say to folks, voting is just one part of a healthy civic diet. One of the most important things you can do is just pay attention to what's happening. Because when politicians think you aren't paying attention, that's where they do their best work. And by best work, I mean, that's where they make our lives worse. If we're paying attention and we're watching them and they know we're watching them, that's when sometimes slowly, sometimes kicking and screaming, they can do things that make our lives better. I know that that's what we're trying to do as a Democratic Party. I only got here 7 months ago, and I say to to folks, you know, give this party a chance to change. Don't hold us in stasis. Don't tell me about what the party was in 2008. I wasn't there in 2008. That was the first year I could vote. Had nothing to do with that. All we can control is what we do next. And what I hope we do next is be a party that spends every single day focused on those three words, how we make life better for working people and working families.
Cameron, you got any other hot button issues for him? I got one more, but I feel like, you know, I feel like I've been buttoning you out.
My buttons are so temperate right now. I have like 70 degree buttons.
You got no buttons? All right. No. Well, here it is. I don't know why I'm the one to do this since as mentioned, I'm a lover of capitalism and was a Republican 2 seconds ago and, you know, don't like holding space for anyone. But somehow I've been the person that has been thrust upon to defend the honor of Zohran Mamdani, socialist, running for mayor of New York. Mm-hmm. I had Hakeem on a couple of weeks ago. He hasn't endorsed Zohran yet. I'm like, what is Trump is simultaneously trying to like help engineer an Andrew Cuomo victory, which is so weird because he's like the worst of the fucking Democratic governors, even when he was a Democrat in good standing. It's what is the and Eric Adams, you know, is Cameron's favorite, is might get a job now in HUD, and then you got the guy with the beret and the cats. Like, it's kind of an obvious choice. And so, why are all these people? Why do you think there's so many Democrats that are so hesitant on this?
Well, listen, one of the things I've recognized in life is I have to control the stuff that I can control, and this is what I can say. Ken Martin, who's the chair of our party, I think was one of the first people within minutes of Zohran clinching that when tweeted out a statement in support of him, the Democratic Party, what we control. And I know when I say the Democratic Party, people always find somebody who's registered as a Democrat and say, well, what about them? Sure. The Democratic Party does not like, we're not on a group text where, we get where Ken Martin or Malcolm Kenyatta sends out orders to our congressional leaders and say, you shall vote this way. You know, people are elected in their own right to represent their districts, and they're going to do what they feel like they need to do in their districts. But the Democratic Party is clear about one thing. We don't pick our nominees, but we support our nominees. And to me, it's not hard. Zohran ran a campaign that we need to study and try to learn from and continue, as folks across New York have been, to be inspired by. I'm certainly going to do everything in my power, everything that he thinks helps and doesn't hurt, to help him become the next mayor of New York and to be the best mayor of New York that he can be for the great people of New York. This is not complicated. And I will say this as vice chair of the party. It can't be blue no matter who, unless the Democrat you didn't like won. The purpose of primaries is to have a family debate. When the debate is over, we have to go out and operate as a team. As you know, I'm an obnoxious Philadelphia Eagles sports fan. When the huddle is over, you go out and you run the fucking play. This is not the time to say, well, this person shouldn't have been on the team, or this person shouldn't have been on the play, or the scheme is not right. That's not where we do it. And so Ken Martin, who's the chair of this party, has been crystal clear where he's at. This Democratic Party has been crystal clear, where we're going to be at. And we're supporting him. We're supporting Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey. We're supporting Abigail Spanberger in Virginia, across the board.
Cameron, then you guys have a couple of mutual friends. Is there anybody else you want to talk about before we leave, or any other thoughts that you have?
That's it. I'm just grateful to come on and talk with you guys.
With the Hakeem Jeffries stuff, one of the things I learned when I was looking at Democrats not endorsing Mamdani was that Cory Booker had given mayoral endorsements many times before in a row, including Mike Bloomberg, but Mike Bloomberg wasn't even a Democrat. He was an independent. So I started thinking, do you think there are any organizations that operate solely in the interest of right-wing nationalist foreign governments, that might be involved with these people who are not endorsing Mamdani? So I did a little bit of research. It took me a long time, scrupulous research. But there's this organization called AI PAC that seems to be giving money to a lot of these politicians who are not endorsing Mamdani. And I had this gay little feeling group, or that they might be AI PAC. I don't know. I think it's the Americans for America's interest and putting Americans first and not operating solely in the interest of a military in the Middle East. I'm not sure. But I think that's probably why. I don't think that there's some abstract emotional explanation.
You know, listen. I don't jump into to anybody's head, but that organization that you mentioned, you know, folks can say Malcolm Kenyatta's gotten $0 and won't be taking any. You know, the point is this: we have to be a party that picks our nominees. I mean, that doesn't pick our nominees, that allows our voters to pick the nominee. You know, we started talking about my election twice as vice chair, and a big part of that conversation was about the party getting out of the business, unequivocally out of the business of there even being a perception that we are trying to put our fingers on the scale and decide for voters. Voters choose. The Democratic voters of this party, they are the folks who run this party. They choose. They chose the nominee, and they chose him in an overwhelming fashion. I mean, he got more votes than any person to run for mayor of New York, you know, ever. And a bunch of things can and must be true, you know, at the same time, right? We have to continue to call out, you know, anti-Semitism. We have to, you know, condemn statements like, you know, globalize the intifada. We have to do that. We have to, at the same time, be unequivocal with calling out what's happening right now in Gaza, seeing babies and folks, you know, starved to death, completely man-made famine. This war has to come to an end. It has to end. But let me end on the, you know, on the thing that I know we can control as the Democratic Party. What we can control is making sure that we leave the choices of who our nominees are to voters. And when voters choose, you don't get to come back on the end and say, well, I have a different, you know, view. Voters in Virginia chose Abigail Spanberger. Voters in New Jersey chose Mikey Sherrill. All of these three people are three different individuals, right? Three different backgrounds, three different views of the world, three different states that they want to be focused on. And you know, I'm going to go back to my favorite three words. But what the line that connects them?
Go Birds.
Is that I know all? Well, yeah, Go Birds. Those are two of my favorite words. But the line that connects all three is that I know, I am confident that each one of those three, they want to make life better for working people and working families in New York, in New Jersey, in Virginia. And I'm telling you, if Democrats keep the main thing, if we focus on how we're going to make life better for working people and working families, we'll not only win elections, but we will allow people to get back to the shit that matters. And what matters is making those fish tacos or talking to your friends loudly on the platform about interesting conversations.
Those are the three words are going to be do gay stuff. No, all right, you're
also,
right.
Also make do gay stuff. Better. But anyway, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys.
No, you don't get to go. I have one more thing.
Sorry, I thought we were ripping. Cam said he had a hard stop when we got on.
He does, but I don't. And I have one more thing really fast.
Go ahead, please.
Because we all have, I mean, you're there. You're the vice chair. Mm-hmm. There is a second vice chair, apparently, that's there too, if they meant there. They're out there. Yep. And there's an ex-vice chair that's out there, you know, doing stuff on the outside. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, you know, Jerry Nadler has left. Now there's a seat open in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cameron is my co-host. He's living in New York. You have a former vice chair that's now out there on the outside who thinks younger people should be running for things. Do you have any thoughts on the Kasky, Clinton, Hogg primary to replace Nadler? Do you have any other candidates you want to throw in? What do you think about the potential?
Listen, I feel two different ways about this. I simultaneously hate primaries because family fights are the worst, right? Because people know kind of where to hit you and it hurts, you know, more and it gets more emotional. You know, I said this and Fox News got all into a tizzy, and I'm going to go back to your question, Tim, but I said this, you know, Democrats have been playing checkers. Trump and Republicans are playing Grand Theft Auto, okay? And they've stolen their third vehicle and they're running with the fire hydrant and they're like, you know, doing everything that they can do. And Fox News got into a tizzy about that. But anyway, the point is, as we figure out how to fight back in this moment, certainly a part of that is going to be people who have the fire in the belly to step up and run. And I think a part of the reason, you know, you see so many young people stepping up and talking about generational change in this moment is because we understand that it's our lives on the line, right? We're deciding whether or not we're going to be able to drink the water and breathe the air, whether or not we'll be able to start a family, to buy a home, and to send our kids to school if we decide to have kids, and they not get shot in the damn classroom. So these things are very emotional and personal. We have folks in our party who are incredible, and they're going to go out and make that argument. My job as vice chair of the party, and I've said this, the Democratic Party, contrary to popular belief, we are not a fucking incumbent protection racket. My job is not to protect incumbents. My job is to support Democratic nominees. And so out of those names that you listed, if one of them becomes a nominee, I will be in New York very quickly, hopefully on mass transit because we fucking fund it. But I will be in New York doing everything I can to, you know, to help. But, you know, voters in the 12th district, they know who they want to pick. But I will say, Cameron, whether it's you or somebody else, incredibly huge shoes to fill. Congressman Nadler is somebody who I continue to be inspired by, somebody who has been an outsized voice, particularly on the monopolies that have corrupted our government. You know, we talk about capitalism, you know, Tim, but what we have is not even really capitalism. It is a corrupt version of capitalism. There is no real competition when everybody can just gobble up, you know, there anybody who could challenge them. So there's a lot of work that we need to do. And I hope that primary, like all primaries, is a robust primary. And when it's over, that folks shake hands, recognize that we have to all be on the same team against autocracy, and then go win elections. But this party, to be united, we don't have to have unanimity. We don't have to have, you know, Abigail Spanberger be the nominee in every district. We don't have to have Mikey Sherrill be the nominee in every district, or Zohran Mamdani be the nominee in every district. People in their communities get to choose. And then we have to make sure we're building the infrastructure for them to go on and win their respective races.
Cameron?
Malcolm, thank you so much. This has been amazing. I just want to issue one clarifying statement before we wrap up today, which is that I haven't made any announcements of anything. I have said that there are some very, very intelligent people, and quite a few of them, I might add, who are asking some very interesting questions about new and cuter than the other competitors' leadership. And that is my truth. And I'm not asking for anybody's endorsements. I'm not asking anybody to donate. But there's conversations being had by very smart and successful people. And I can't stop those conversations. I can just hold space for those truths. Everybody with Polar, we're Malcolm, Tim, and Cam.
We had to get holding space in here before it was over. All right. Well, thanks for you know, having some space for me today. I appreciate you guys. Take care. And enjoy those fish tacos, my friend.
Oh, we're going to.
Thank you, Cameron.